This Friday at noon, pianist and astrophysicist Dan Tepfer joins bassist Jorge Roeder and saxophonist Dana Stevens and Melissa Aldana in a series of duets. Performing live? That's right, even though they're in separate spaces, they'll be performing together in real time thanks to some modern tech and a little brilliance. Join us for this historic event, part of WBGO's Summer Guarantee Fundraiser, hosted by me, Simon Rentner. This Friday at noon on WBGO's Facebook page. Michael Dessen joins us here on the checkout from WBGO and working on these issues with latency in the music world. So are you an academic first, a trombonist first,
I'm a musician first and then everything else. But yeah, I'm a composer, a trombonist, do a lot of work with technology, and I've been in academia for a while, so that's been a nice way to just make a living and, you know, sort of get the bills paid. But also to be able to teach. I love teaching and build community there. So this music isn't for everybody. The kind of stuff you're producing and promoting it's got a wonderful community, but I'm sort of one of those people trying to sneak it into academia, I guess you could say, so that it gets a little bit of support there too. So that's been part of my thing, but yeah, I compose and perform, and Jorge was in my first version of my trio many years ago, and then I moved away from that area where I moved out to California, so I lost touch with him for a while, but he's fantastic. So glad to hear you're doing this.
First of all, what was the impetus behind even doing this in the first place, and when did you do it, and what happened?
Well, that's a good question. What happened was around the late 90s and early 2000s, there were new networks being developed for pretty much exclusively universities and research institutions that were much faster than anything that had come before, right? And in the United States, the consortium that manages these networks is called Internet 2. And so Internet 2 networks, they have a pretty long history as an organization, but it was around 2000 that they started to be kind of put into most universities. And so suddenly there was this really new level of capacity for sending large amounts of data very quickly over the internet. And what happened was really that, to give credit where it's due, that there's a whole wide community of people across the world that have built different tools. But one of the main tools in this kind of community, and the one that I use the most, is called JackTrip, and it was developed by some people at Stanford University, especially Chris Chafe, who is a professor there and was back then, and Juan Pablo Cáceres, who was a grad student back then. They saw the potential of these networks, and they wrote this software, which is a pretty small little program actually, but it takes advantage of some other open source software that had been around, and it basically just uses a kind of a routing software on a computer to link up to another computer that uses that same routing software, but through the internet. And they really just designed this software called JackTrip to send audio specifically very quickly with extremely low latency across the internet, and to do it with audio that was lossless, you know, uncompressed, high quality sound. So they did this in the early 2000s, and it was really around 2007 or so when I started to get involved with using this, around the early years of that. And what it was really focused on was trying to figure out, you know, how quickly we can send the audio so that we can see what the possibilities are for people actually playing music together with really low latency. And then since then, you know, those of us who use the software and people who are developing it, we've just continued to work on this. We've put on a lot of concerts. Not everybody knows each other, but there's growing networks of people using this software and some other programs like it. But JackTrip is one of the big ones. And so it's an area, I guess one of the terms that has emerged is networked music performance, and the other is telematic music. But there have been some people like Paulian Oliveros, who passed away a few years ago, but was a big advocate of this technology, who brought me and other people into this world. And a lot of us have been putting on concerts this way now for, you know, over a dozen years and just exploring it. But the final bit of this is that we've been doing these concerts mostly at universities, because that is where we can get access to these really high-speed networks. But in the past few years, home networks have gotten faster. So now it's possible to some degree to do this at home. It's still not quite the same as doing it on the really fast networks we have at universities. And it's not possible for everybody to do at home. It depends on a lot of factors. But it's a changing field. There's a lot of activity going on. And now with the pandemic, suddenly there's a lot of interest in this where there really wasn't much before. So it's been exploding in the past few months with interest and questions and developers working on new ways to build out the tools and the documentation. So it's a really growing area right now all of a sudden.
Now, I'm not the scientist, so I'm going to break things to make them in layman terms. Is this like basically you need basically 5G speed or 4G, or what is it exactly in order to be able to even execute this?
Well, it's hard to say exactly, because there's a lot of factors to networking, and speed is a big part of it, but the quality of service you get on a network has a lot of, there's a lot of things that impact that, that are beyond just the speed. We have to do this work on wired connections, not over Wi-Fi. So at the moment, that's still, fixed limitation. We're not doing this on mobile devices over Wi-Fi. We're using computers that are connected with Ethernet cables to a router or to your internet connection. So in general, we can do this with 5 megabits per second minimum, but it really often requires a little bit more upload and download speed. And so a particularly fast home connection, it is possible to send one or two channels of CD quality audio and receive it. But there's a lot of factors. For example, when I do rehearsals with someone, I have to tell people in my house, you know, you can't stream movies or do Zoom meetings while I'm doing this, because if they're on on the same network doing that, it tends to kill the quality of my connection. So, you know, there's a lot of different factors that impact networking. And it's also complicated to set up and use this software and get it working. It's not really plug and play quite yet.
Okay. I imagine that because of the urgency of a software like this, especially now in the music community, you have a bunch of people you probably know that are working really hard on this right now to so that it's a little bit more user-friendly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm one of those, and many of us are trying to, I guess I would say there's two things going on. One is that the people who are software developers are really working hard to try to bring new tools to the market and make new open source tools available to people. So there's a lot of programmers at work building new things or improving the things that exist. And then those of us like me who aren't really developers but are heavy users, you might say, we're trying to work on improving the documentation so that it's easier for people to get working with these things, and also improve the kind of information out there about what's available, because not everybody has the resources or the knowledge or time to go through what's needed to get up to speed with the more high-tech tools, but there might be a slightly, you know, lower grade option that might work for somebody and be a better alternative, say, to Zoom or Skype. And so we're trying to figure out how to answer people's questions about what, you know, what's the best tool for you given your situation, I would say. But for the more complicated tools, we're also trying to create better documentation. There's a lot of work right now. A lot of us are trying to do that, build out new online documentation, and that's coming. It's slowly getting there, but it depends on, you know, the product really. But the Jacktrip software we're using is a lot of complexities to it, so it's not really as simple as just saying, here's how it works. You have to It depends on people's platform. And it's also not just about the software, but when you run into problems, you have to know how to figure out where they even are. Is it the network? Is it the software? Is it the hardware? So there's a lot of potential things to look at.
So basically, as far as my understanding, this is my crude understanding of the internet. You know, the normal person basically has approximately, you know, my 5 megabytes upload speed and around 30 to 40 megabytes download speed. And you said that does, in fact, those are the minimum requirements ultimately for somebody to
Right. It might work. It might work with, we've found that, you know, 5 is tricky, but if ideally you want about 10, but even with as little as 5, it could work. It really depends on the quality of your network and how consistent it is. It's hard to put an exact number on it,
but the weird thing,
minimum 5. Yeah.
The weird thing that I've noticed as I've been editing my Zoom interviews digitally is the latency isn't consistent. There's all this like slow modulation, slowing down, speeding up. It's in sync, then it's not, then it's back in sync again.
Right.
So it's not just a drag issue. It's all these other things too.
Right. And that's where you start to actually, when you're thinking about networking, it gets really complicated pretty quick. For example, what you just described, this variation is, the term in networking for that is jitter. So the jitter, when people in networking, computer networking, talk about jitter, they're talking about the variation in the delay. And so, you know, you can imagine that maybe you have a connection with somebody that's really fast, but if it has a very high level of jitter, where suddenly from 1 second to the next, you feel like, well, now it feels like they're 5 feet away from you, but now it feels like they're 20 feet away from you all of a sudden. That would make it hard to play music with people, right? So you have to account for that as well as the actual average latency. There are a lot of these factors. But the tools, even a tool like Zoom, they're really working on making it better all the time. And it's a lot better now than it was even 5 years ago.
So in your mind, when do you think there will be a product like JackTrip that will be available for musicians that can, say, run Ableton or run Pro Tools to, you know, a certain, you know, a moderate, intermediate degree, you know, just have some wherewithal with programs, you know, to do stuff? When do you think musicians could potentially have access to something like this and actually deploy it?
Well, that's a good question. I would say it's possible that even within 6 months to a year from now, there could be a plug-in that does get you pretty close to the quality of, or that replicates, let's say, the quality of what we can do with JackTrip. But there already exist plugins that get pretty close, just not quite all the way. And so this is where it's a matter of degree and also how much, what constitutes usability, how, you know, for whom are we talking about? Because, you know, people who have to use a DAW with a plugin, that's one type of person. People who don't even know what a DAW is and just want to open up an app, that's another type of person. People who can install command line software and use it, that's another type. So there's all these different degrees, but there are people actually working right now on essentially a sort of a download plug and play type version of JackTrip. And I'm kind of hopeful that within a year we'll see something like that that'll be a lot easier to use than the current version. There's a couple things to get around though to make it really truly plug and play. And one is having servers in some sort of ecosystem set up so that they can handle the traffic so that people don't have to do it essentially acting as the server themselves, because that requires customizing your home network to a great degree that most people aren't going to be able to do. So there is, and I should say, there are a couple tools. There's one called JamKazam. There's another called Jamulus. These are both tools that people can use that are much more plug and play. And they're kind of close to JackTrip. They're just not quite the same audio quality, not quite not quite as low latency, but they can be close and almost there, and with compressed sound, and they don't always work for everybody on every situation, but they might. So it's a little bit, it's not sort of a black and white question, but there's a lot of things kind of, you know, crowding the space that are different options. And I think a year from now there will be even more options and better options, and I think it'll be less like, here now suddenly is this product that does everything for everybody needs. It'll be more like gradually, you know, things come into play that change the situation. And in a way it's like that with most technologies. It's not like a word processor suddenly sprung forth and was there for everybody to use out of nowhere. They kind of evolved gradually, right? So it's kind of like that.
Now, if I'm going to really scrutinize this tool and be nitpicky about it, I was having a conversation with the New School's Bobby Sanabria, a percussionist drummer, also happens to have a show on our radio station, WBGO. And you know, he was making this joke of like, you know, before I had Jack Tripp, I didn't sound like anybody. But when I got it, I started to sound like Elvin Jones.
That's hilarious. Bobby's such a great musician. That's really funny to hear. I don't know him personally. That's great.
But so, it brings into question this whole notion of swing. Does this musician swing? You know, is the audio latency imperceptible enough that an Art Blakey isn't an Art Blakey anymore?
Right. Well, it's a great question that, I mean, there's several layers to that, right? One is just virtuality in general. How do we know something's real when we're experiencing it through a screen and you know, audio coming through speakers compared to being in the same room and seeing it with our eyes, right? So, the latency question is interesting because there's latency with audio always. Actually, if someone's standing right next to you, there's latency, right? So latency is just a part of reality in the sense that sound always takes time to travel from one place to the next. In fact, I can play with my friend Mark Dresser, who's about 70 miles from here. You know, it would take me an hour to drive to his house, but I can play with him with less latency between our homes now than two people on opposite sides of a symphony orchestra. So, you know, it latency is also really relative to music in the sense that there are a lot of kinds of music, like an orchestra, where you think of an opera where you have a big stage and people all across this wide stretch of space, and you know, there's a lot of latency going on there. And or you think of, say, the sound quality when you put a rock band in a big amphitheater. You know, they might be hearing themselves on headphones, so they might be able to kind of feel like they're experiencing something really tight. But in fact, you know, in the old days when we didn't have that kind of stuff, there were a lot of performance situations where you're dealing with really imprecise acoustics or playing in a cathedral. I mean, latency is just part of the world and how sound works. So trying to really minimize it through this technology is really just trying to see how we can push the technology to get to a place where we can do as much as we want. But it's not necessarily for all of us all the time a matter of removing it. You know, we can. I mean, like, I want to play certain kinds of music, I have to get it down to a threshold where it feels like we're in the same room playing together. But there's other kinds of music that can work even with a little latency. When we play with people who are beyond a certain distance, there's no way to get rid of it. So I can play, if we have enough bandwidth, I can play with people up to about 500 miles and feel like I'm, you know, a few feet away from them, and it can work. But after about that distance, we're going to start to get some latency. So if I play with someone who's 3,000 miles away or more, we're going to have a quarter second kind of round trip delay. And at that point, you know, you don't have to give up on playing music, but you got to change the music you're trying to play, right? Because it's not going to all work. So that becomes an interesting question, because in a way that's what composers have always done. They've adapted music to the physical space. When people wrote for cathedrals, they were taking into account the acoustics of the cathedral. when you write for an orchestra, you have to take into account the latency that's built into having that many people in a room together. So there's, you know, there's a lot of interesting music that might come out of virtual spaces in all kinds of ways, not just latency, but that's one of them, one of the ways in which these new telepresent spaces we're operating in might actually lead us to think about and experience, you know, synchrony in new kinds of ways. But if we really push the tools, we can also get them to a place where we can, to some degree, replicate the tight synchrony we experience when we're playing in a band together, too.
Now, I know this may be obvious to you because you just said it, and it may confuse the majority of our audience when you said, I can play more in time, basically, with Mark Dresser, who's 70 miles away, than somebody that's on the other side of the stage from me. How on earth can that be? That might sound obvious to you, but that's a great question.
Right. No, it's a great question. It might be obvious to me because I do it, but it still amazes me. It still amazes me that we can do this. So the answer is that sound travels at a certain speed, but what we're doing when we're playing, say, 70 miles apart using a tool like JackTrip, we're not you know, yelling at each other through the air, right? we're sending it through fiber optic cables under the ground, which essentially the data moves at the speed of light. And so the sound latency through the air is just the time that it takes for my sound to get into my microphone. And then there's a little latency in the amount of time that it takes for the microphone signal to go through my audio equipment through the computer and get converted to a whole bunch of zeros and ones and then go out through the Ethernet cable in my wall and go underground. But at that point, it travels at the speed of light down to my friend. And then it goes through the reverse process, getting out through his gear. So if you're using decent audio equipment, you can get the latency through all of that down pretty low to, you know, 5 to 10 milliseconds. And if you can send through the internet at a really fast speed and get it down to your partner, the way that it actually works is that you can get down to where the total delay time from, say, when I make a sound to where my friend 70 miles away hears it, the total delay time is about 25 to 30 milliseconds. And in fact, that's equivalent to being about 25 to 30 feet away from somebody in the same room. So a lot of large symphony orchestras, for example, you might have people that are 50 feet away from each other. And that's why I made that example. So if we can get our latency down to even closer to, say, 20 milliseconds one way, this is where the research has indicated that there's a threshold of around 20 to 30 milliseconds. And this research, by the way, has been done by quite a few people, but among them, Chris Chafe, who is one of the authors of the JackTrip software we're using. And the research indicates that when you get the one-way latency down to about under, say, 20, 25 to 30 milliseconds, you can play in time with people, and musicians can play in time. They really don't feel a problem. They feel like they're, you know, and that sort of makes sense if you're a musician. If you imagine, let's say you're a band. If you stretch a band out to where everybody's within, say, a 20-foot, you know, no one's more than 20 feet away from each other or even 30 feet away from each other, you can groove pretty tight, right? But if you go beyond, say, 25 to 30 feet away from people and you're playing acoustic instruments, you're going to start to feel like you notice it a little bit. When you get up to 40, 50 feet, you're definitely going to notice it, right? If you're trying to play something that really is tightly synchronous. And so that's why I'm saying that when we can get our round trip, our one-way latency down to under, say, 25 milliseconds, we're good. We can play virtually anything. And that doesn't mean that an orchestra can't play in time. Obviously they can, but, you know, it's hard. If you put two people at the far reaches of an orchestra, and let's say you tried to play some James Brown music and you put the bassist and drummer on one side and you put the farthest side of the orchestra, you put the guitarist and the, you know, the singer or whatever, and you tried to get them to play that kind of music, it would be tough, you know, at a 50 to 60 foot distance, that would be hard to really groove together. So that's kind of what I mean. We can actually, it's not so much about, you know, the physical distance between us. It's really about how fast the information's traveling and getting between us. So it seems counterintuitive, but it's true, you know, that it can work. And it's also amazing to think of how quickly you touch your phone, you know, you type a text, you hit send, it can reach someone on the other side of the planet literally less than a second later. I mean, how does that, if you really stop and think about that and how that works, it's kind of mind-blowing, really. I mean, that's where I'm constantly amazed that humans have been able to figure this out. I mean, it's an incredible thing that's literally going under the ocean, that information that you're sending to someone in Asia, you know, and it's doing that in less than a second sometimes. So, wow. That's pretty incredible. I mean, think about that. it's a lot. When you really start to look at how these things work, the engineering of it, it's almost kind of a mystic level of like a supernatural magic kind of capacity that human civilization has cultivated to exchange information and data over that kind of distance so quickly.
Well, Michael Dessen, thank you for joining us on this emergency edition of the Checkout from WBGO. Before we try our own non-latency or minimal, imperceptible, hopefully, level of latency with our upcoming concert of duets featuring Dan Teffer and Jorge Roeder, who I understand you played with a number of times.
Yeah. Please say hello. I got to get in touch with Jorge. I haven't talked to him for a while. He's a fantastic musician.
And also joining us, saxophonist Melissa Aldana, and the saxophonist Dana Stevens. Series of duets kicking off at noon Eastern time. Hopefully, now we have to start like exactly on the second mark just to pay homage to the miracle.
Right.
If we start this concert 1 second late, I feel like we're doing an injustice to the technology.
Well, I wouldn't worry too much about that. With these kind of musicians, it's going to be a great concert no matter what. So those are fantastic players, and I'll check it out. Looking forward to hearing it.
Thank you, Michael. Well, that was
thanks
awesome.
For having me,
Sam. I really appreciate you doing this on such short notice.
Sure.
That was awesome.
Great. Well, thanks for all that you're doing. This is really great. And, you know, musicians, I mean, I'm lucky to be an academic, so I have a salary through that I'm not hit as hard by this. But, you know, the kind of musicians that you're talking about playing this week, these folks are just crushed by this situation, and it's just heartbreaking to see people who, you know, depend for their whole livelihood on live performance, what they're dealing with right now. So I really appreciate it. And I'm sure you too. I mean, you know, it's not an easy situation for anybody in the media right now, but it's really great to see people who have a history of, you know, supporting this music and continuing to find ways to get it out there and bring in audience. And I appreciate it. So thanks for all you're doing.
Well, thank you, Michael, because I would like to actually feature you now as a trombonist, not a tech nerd or educator. Actually feature something from your clean feed recording from 2014 called Resonating Abstractions with Christopher Tordini and Dan Weiss. This is called Ignite, and thanks again for joining us, the Michael Dessen Trio. Thank you. Michael Dessen, composer, trombonist, and brilliant mind, on his recording Resonating Abstractions, Ignite, with Chris Twardini and Dan Weiss. And definitely make sure to join us this Friday at noon, May 15th, where all kinds of bleep is going down. I have no idea what's going to happen, but that's part of the fun of it, right? We're just experimenting here. We're doing a series of duets, maybe 9 of them in total. Dan Teffer, Melissa Aldana, Dana Stevens, and Jorge Roeder, all going at it using this Jack Trip software. And you can watch it with us. Join me. I'll be hosting the program, and it's going to be a ball of fire. That's this Friday, May 15th at noon Eastern Daylight Time. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. Thanks for checking us out.